3, chapter 12. Chapter 12 is entitled Creation of the Kumaras and Others, and today we are reading text 23. The Sage Kritu. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Narada was born from the deliberation of Brahma, which is the best part of his body. Vashishta was born from his breathing. Daksha from a thumb. Prigu from his touch. And Kratu from his hand. Purport. Narada was born from the best deliberation of Brahma, because Narada was able to deliver the Supreme Lord to anyone he liked. The Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be realized by any amount of Vedic knowledge or by any number of penances, but a pure devotee of the Lord, like Narada, can deliver the Supreme Lord by his goodwill. The very name Narada suggests that he can deliver the Supreme Lord. Nara means the Supreme Lord, and Da means one who can deliver. That he can deliver the Supreme Lord does not mean that the Lord is like a commodity that can be delivered to any person. But Narada can deliver to anyone the transcendental loving service of the Lord as a servitor, friend, parent or lover, as one may desire out of one's own transcendental love for the Lord. In other words, it is Narada only who can deliver the path of Bhakti Yoga, the highest mystic means for attainment of the Supreme Lord. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjanashalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Jainam Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manosisham Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kathamayam Dadati Swaranamitam Mukam Karoti Vashalam Pamrum Lankaya Chetrim Yat Kripa is being given of how Brahma is creating different elements. He has started creation, secondary creation, the Visarga. In the previous chapter, he has darshan of the Lord, and the Lord actually guides him from within how he should do the creation. He shows him like a blueprint of the secondary creation. So the primary creation of Sarga has already been done by the Lord. That means all the elements that are necessary for creation have been provided by the Lord, along with a blueprint also on how Brahma should create, what he should do to now populate the universe, to create all the various planets, all the different species. So all that information was given to Brahma in the second chapter of this canto. And now in this chapter we see that Brahma has started creation. And like Swarup Shakti Mataji was so nicely describing yesterday, that first it was essential for Brahma to create self-deception, like a sense of false ego. Otherwise it is very difficult for living entities to live in this material world, unless that sense of false ego is there. And after he created all that self-deception, false ego, illusion, all that, he was not feeling very good. He was feeling, what am I doing? You know, I'm creating some things which are actually going to keep the living entities in the material world. He knew, because he is a servant of the Supreme Lord, so he knew what is actually necessary for going out of the material world. So he knew the first elements that he's created are not conducive. They are actually binding human beings, living entities in the material world. So then he does some good creation. He starts creating. First he creates the four Kumaras. And we saw a few verses ago, the speakers were describing how the four Kumaras were not happy but to populate the universe. They didn't want to follow in the footsteps or follow the instructions of their father. So they actually reject the orders of Lord Brahma and they go away, because they are highly realized souls. And Brahma realizes that he won't be able to engage them as progenitors to create population in the universe. So the four Kumaras leave and go away, and then Brahma creates next Rudra. He actually gets a little angry with the four Kumaras, but he tries to curtail his anger. And out of the anger which he tries to curtail, from his forehead, a blue and red mixed baby is born, which is none other than Rudra or Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva actually creates, he is following the instructions of his father, but he actually creates living entities just like him. And they are all, we know Lord Shiva is in charge of the mode of ignorance. So all those living entities are like Lord Shiva. And untimely they start destruction in the universe. So Brahma gets a bit scared and he says, no, no, hold on, hold on. This is not what is required right now. Right now I'm in the process of just creation. I've started the universe, so I don't need these services right now. So he tells Lord Shiva, you take your associates and you go to the forest and you do penances. And when your services are required, you will be called. Because yes, destruction is also part of this material world. Everything gets destroyed at the end of the day of Lord Brahma. Then he again creates the next day morning. So he says that service is definitely important and it is required, but not now. So he sends Lord Shiva away and then he starts creating what we are looking at now. He first creates Narad Muni. He creates the sages and then he creates his best son Narad Muni. That's what Prabhupada describes in the purport. So in this verse it is continuing. Brahma's creation of good living entities is continuing, who will help him to populate the universe with good progeny, and who will also help him to discharge devotional service, which will help living entities to go out of the universe. So all the others whom he has created, like Daksha is one of the greatest progenitors. So we will see in the subsequent chapters, it will come in the subsequent cantos, how Daksha helps to populate the universe. Even the other sages like Kritu and all will help to increase the population. But the main purpose of creation of Narad Muni was different. And that's why it is said that Narad Muni was born from the deliberation of Brahma. That means his deliberation. He was deliberating on how living entities could be saved. And that is how Narad Muni was created. So he was the best creation in terms of delivering people from this world. Because Narad Muni is infested with the bhakti shakti of the Lord. He represents the devotional service, the energy of the devotional service of the Lord. And therefore it is considered, like he is considered as one of the best creations of Brahma. And Prabhupada explains in the purport that Narad Muni is a pure devotee. He is an eternal associate of the Lord. And he can deliver the Supreme Lord to anyone he likes. Mainly because of his own devotional power. He has that power, being a pure devotee and an eternal associate of the Lord. He has the power to deliver the Supreme Lord to anyone. And in fact, he can give them the highest rasa of exchange, of relationship with the Lord. Like Prabhupada explains here, in the rasa, transcendental exchange of friend, parent, lover or servitor. So that is what Narad Muni has the capacity to deliver to conditioned living entities of this world. And that is what is Narad Muni's duty in this world. And Narad Muni executes that duty so nicely in service of the Supreme Lord. And we see Narad Muni's character is glorified throughout the Bhagavatam. So we will dwell a little bit on Narad Muni today. And we will see how Narad Muni is, we'll discuss two aspects about Narad Muni. One is how he is an expert preacher. How he does this a service of delivering the Supreme Lord to the conditioned living entities. Because conditioned living entities come in all forms. They come with their various conditionings. They may come with, you know, we will discuss all those. What sort of personalities he meets. And what sort of expert preaching techniques he uses to deliver these conditioned souls whom he meets. And we will also see that how he is ready to take risks. Just because he has this compassion. His heart is full of compassion. And he wants to give the Supreme Lord to everyone. So how he takes risks and how he is an expert preacher. What expertise he uses to give the Supreme Lord to conditioned living entities in the material world. So Narad Muni is not being introduced here for the first time in the Srimad Bhagavatam. In the very beginning of Bhagavatam, in the first canto itself, Narad Muni is introduced in the Bhagavatam. There Narad Muni is seen as coming. We see Vyasadeva is trying to write down. He is trying to jot down all the scriptures. So he's already written down the Vedas. And then he has subdivided. First he wrote one Veda, then he subdivided them into four. Then he wrote the Itihasas, Puranas. All these things he has done, Upanishads. But we see that Vyasadeva is very dissatisfied after doing this. And then Narad Muni arrives there, his spiritual master. He is meditating and thinking, why am I feeling dissatisfied? Even after I've written down so much literature. And then Narad Muni arrives there. And Narad Muni, being the expert preacher, he explains to Vyasadeva what is the reason for his dissension or what is the reason for the dissatisfaction in his heart. And he tells Vyasadeva that although you have created so much literature, you have missed the vital, the main thing of glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that is why there is dissatisfaction in your heart. So then he says that write down literature which will actually glorify the Supreme Lord in the three worlds. And then Vyasadeva again sits in meditation and then he writes down the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is full of glorification. It is the Amala Purana and it is full of glorification of the Supreme Lord. So we see Narad Muni is introduced in the beginning of Bhagavatam itself as the spiritual master of Vyasadeva. And Vyasadeva is the literary incarnation of the Lord. So such an exalted disciple, Vyasadeva is actually an exalted disciple, but Narad Muni is even able to expertly preach to him and guide him on the correct path and explain to him the reason why his heart is not feeling good. Then in the second canto, so a good, Prabhupada always explains that a good guru, a good disciple only can become a good guru. Like a good student can become a good teacher. A person who has not received instructions will never be able to give proper instructions. So in the second canto, we see that role of Narad Muni. In the second canto, Narad Muni is actually receiving instructions from Brahma. So Narad Muni, Brahma has actually got instructions from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and then Narad Muni goes and questions him. And there it is described that Narad Muni asks Brahma that I thought you are the all in all, I thought you are the Supreme Creator. But I can see that you are engaged in penances and all that, you are engaged in some austerities. So can you please explain to me the reason of this? And then Brahma describes everything, that how he is just the secondary creator, how the primary creator is the Supreme Lord. And Brahma glorifies the Supreme Lord to him. In fact, the four Chatushloki Bhagavatam which Brahma had heard from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that Chatushloki Bhagavatam again Brahma explains to Narad Muni. So that is how Narad Muni has directly received instructions from Brahma, who is his spiritual master and his father also. So in this way, Narad Muni is doing proper hearing from authorized sources, learning about Srimad Bhagavatam from the proper spiritual master in disciplic succession. Brahma heard from Krishna and now Narad Muni is hearing from Brahma. And then he is able to deliver this message to the conditioned living entities. So that is how Narad Muni is a good student and therefore he is able to become a good preacher also. That aspect of Narad Muni we see in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. In the third canto we see, like now we are seeing how Narad Muni was created and how, you know, he has been given the duty of propagating spirit, devotional science throughout the world, throughout the universe. In the fourth canto, his main preaching activities start. So in the initial part of the fourth canto, we see Narad Muni preaching to Dhruva Maharaj. And then we see him preaching to King Prachina Bharishat, and we also see him preaching to the Prachetas at the end of the fourth canto. So we will go in detail in some of the aspects of his preaching, how he expertly preached to Prachina Bharishat and Dhruva Maharaj. Then in the fifth canto, we see him as the spiritual master of Priyavrata. In the beginning of the canto itself, when you know Dhruva Maharaj's pastimes have wound up and there is no one to rule the world. So Priyavrata was actually a self. Priyavrata is the brother of Uttanapad. Svayambhuva Manu had two sons, Uttanapad and Priyavrata. So Uttanapad had ruled the world, his son was King Uttama and Dhruva Maharaj, and how Dhruva Maharaj, we know the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj and how Dhruva Maharaj became the king and he ruled the world for many years. But after that there was no one to carry forward the lineage. And then Priyavrata had already renounced. He had become a self-realized soul and his spiritual master was again Narad Muni. So it describes how Priyavrata had completely renounced. He was engaged in devotional service of the Lord under the tutelage of his spiritual master Narad Muni. But because it was required, someone was required to again rule the world. There was no proper ruler at that time. After Uttanapada and Dhruva Maharaj, that lineage had gone back. So then Svayambhuva Manu, the father of Priyavrata, comes and tries to explain to him that you please engage in household affairs. You will have to get into enter Grahastha Ashram and become a king and come and rule the kingdom. And we see there that he is not convinced. Then Lord Brahma himself comes. And again we see Narad Muni's aspect of how he is a good student. So it shows that although Narad Muni had only shown, he had only shown the path of renunciation to Priyavrata and how to become a self-realized person and not get entangled in the affairs of the material world. But as soon as Brahma arrives there, it is described in the beginning of that canto that immediately Narad Muni also gets up and they all pay obeisances to Brahma. And when Brahma very nicely explains that why Priyavrata is required to take charge of ruling the universe, then even Narad Muni gives his blessings. So he's a good student. He follows the instructions of his spiritual master and therefore he is able to deliver so many conditioned souls. In the sixth canto, that's a very important canto where Prabhupada gives very instructive purports on how Narad Muni is an expert preacher. So there he delivers Daksha's sons. Daksha, as we said, he has just been produced by Brahma and he will become one of the greatest progenitors. So Daksha produces 10,000 sons and Narad Muni goes and delivers all of them. They were called the Haryashwas. And Daksha is lamenting after that, oh my 10,000 sons are gone. Like Narad Muni, Daksha knows the codes, he knows the Vedic scriptures, he knows what is Vedic culture. So he knows before they can become the next progenitors, he sends his 10,000 sons to do meditation, to do austerities. So Daksha knows that without austerity, without meditation on the Supreme Lord, you will not get that empowerment to do the service to the Supreme Lord of populating the universe. So while these sons are meditating, Narad Muni reaches there. And he convinces them how it is not, you know, important to pursue all these affairs of the material world, become kings and all that, and it is important. There is a very nice analogy he describes to the Haryashwas. So we'll discuss a little bit in detail and then we will see how Daksha is so upset. So again, you know, Brahma pacifies him. It's okay, you create next set of sons. So next set of sons. And then Daksha creates 1,000 more sons. And you know, Narad Muni is absolutely amazing. He is not afraid at all. He again goes to those 1,000 sons who have been again sent for meditation. And he again convinces them that, oh, you should follow in the footsteps of your brothers. They left the world, they went for renunciation and self-realization. You all also go. So in the same way, Narad Muni delivers 11,000 sons of Daksha. And that happens in the sixth canto. Again, towards the end of the sixth canto, Narad Muni comes back to give instructions to Maharaj Chitraketu. So Chitraketu actually was lamenting. He didn't have a son. And he was lamenting. He marries 1 crore wives, it is mentioned, just in the hope of getting one son. But there was no son written in his destiny. So ultimately he prays and then, you know, Narad Muni blesses, okay, but that son will be the cause of your happiness and distress both. And then he gets a son. And Chitraketu is thinking, oh, happiness and distress means what? The son will be a bit disobedient. He will not listen to me. That is why there will be some distress. Maybe he will not follow my instructions. Or maybe he will do some activities which are not proper. That's okay. You know, young boys are like that. I'll be able to bring him back. That is how Chitraketu was thinking when he was warned that the son will be source of misery and happiness both. But little did he realize that his own wives are going to poison the son and the son's going to be taken away. So that is what happens. And then when he and his wife are lamenting, piteously they are lamenting for the loss of their son, again Narad Muni arrives there along with Angira Muni. And there are very nice instructions Narad Muni gives to King Chitraketu to bring him out of his lamentation. So that is how in most of the cantos, in the seventh, we will not go into every canto, but again in the seventh canto Narad Muni comes. He is there in the seventh canto as being the spiritual master of Prahlad Maharaj. And with Prahlad Maharaj, he did not even wait for Prahlad Maharaj to be born. Directly in the womb, while he is in the womb of his mother, he is preaching to Prahlad Maharaj. And just by delivering the message of Bhagavatam to Prahlad Maharaj while he was in the womb, he made Prahlad Maharaj into such a pure devotee of the Lord. So we see, and even in the tenth canto, again, he is delivering Nalakuvera and Manigriva. So we see in every canto, Narad Muni is there, expertly preaching with a heart full of compassion, trying to deliver all these conditioned souls who are there in the material world, trying to give them Krishna, somehow give the Supreme Lord to them, trying to somehow show the path to them of how to go back to Godhead. So that is how expert Narad Muni was. In fact, it is mentioned by Srila Prabhupada in one of the purports in the conversation between Sutta Goswami and the sages of Nainisharanya. And there Prabhupada mentions, what is realization? So we'll see how Narad Muni was so expert and he was so realized in how to preach, how to deliver the message of Krishna. So Prabhupada explains in that purport what is realization and what is not realization. And that I found very instructive, what Prabhupada explains in the purport. So Prabhupada says, first he discusses what is not realization, what cannot be called as a realization for a devotee. Prabhupada says that if you speak something out of vanity, Vanity means with false pretense, to show off your knowledge. Sometimes we see, you know, some devotees have, they have very good grasp over shlokas. So we see many devotees have this, you know, think of saying so many shlokas. So it is good actually to memorize shlokas, but it should not be done out of vanity, or it should not be done out of showing off your expertise on shlokas. See how I can rattle off so many shlokas. I remember once we had attended one such session when we were in Japan, in Tokyo. One of the devotees had taken us to it was Gita Jayanti, and many different faiths had sort of come together. And there were many people who were sitting and who were showing, like, you know, giving some small talks on Bhagavad Gita. So there was one person who had come, I think he was a follower of Panduran Shastri Athavale. And he knew, he had really, you know, kudos to him, he had really memorized so many shlokas from the Bhagavad Gita. And he was complete 12th chapter, 15th chapter, he was able to recite the entire chapters. And with all those, you know, connotations and pronunciations and all that, yaha, vaha, like that, you know, saying all those pronunciations. So very nicely he was reciting the shlokas. And then it came the turn of, you know, our ISKCON devotee to give a short talk. And this devotee very humbly, not that, you know, he was trying to cut down that devotee, but very humbly he explained to the audience that it's good to memorize shlokas, but we don't want to become parrots, just, you know, rattling off shlokas without realizing what is the import of the shlokas. So this devotee's idea was mainly to do book distribution, to distribute Bhagavad Gita's and Gita Jayanti. So he explains to them, to the audience, that just rattling of shlokas is not going to make us realize what is the meaning of the shlokas. And therefore you need some explanation on every meaning or on every verse that Krishna has spoken. And therefore this book is special. Mm-hmm. And that's how he, you know, distributes Srila Prabhupada's books, that how Prabhupada has written explanation for each and every verse. So it's good you memorize, you rattle off shlokas, but please understand the meaning of the shloka and how to apply it in your life. That is more important. And that is how he, you know, he does, we saw him doing distribution in that way over there. So Prabhupada says that is not realization. When someone is trying to show off their expertise on some knowledge, on some aspect, either the grammar of Vedas or shlokas or, you know, something they have heard somewhere. So if somebody is trying to show off, or they have a false pretense to show mainly how great you are. Oh, see, how I'm a scholar, how I have a grasp of all Vedic stories. So then you are not actually having realization when you are speaking. It is not, you are not speaking from your realizations, Prabhupada says. Especially people who are trying to trespass their previous acharyas, thinking that I am expert and I can deliver this message much better. So when some people are trying to do that, Prabhupada explains in that purport, then that is not realization. And then Prabhupada explains what is realization. And this is all again in relation to Narad Muni, it is being explained. So Prabhupada says that for realization to be called as a realization, the first condition is that the speaker should have full confidence in the previous acharya. He has to have confidence that the previous acharya, whoever has written the books or whoever has delivered the message, he is a bona fide spiritual, you know, successor, and he is actually delivering the message as it is. So one should not try to surpass the previous acharya, but have full confidence in the purports of the previous acharya. That is the first condition, Prabhupada says. The second condition is that, you know, confidence in the previous acharya is not enough, but the philosophy has to be presented very nicely and very aptly, such that it suits the audience and it touches and pierces the heart of the audience. That is the second point, Prabhupada says. So not that just, oh, I have confidence. No, but you have to deliver the message also properly. Prabhupada uses the word nicely. Deliver the message nicely to the audience, such that it touches their heart, such that it has some impact in their lives. And the third condition which Prabhupada says for a person to have realization is that the original purpose is maintained. So a person may actually deliver the message nicely and he might tell lots of stories and all that to support whatever point he was making. But at the end, if the audience is confused and they have forgotten what was the original purpose of this speaker, then he has lost. That is not called as a realization. So Prabhupada once was asked, you know, like if he was discussing with one of his disciples. And Prabhupada said to his disciple that if you preach to someone and that person walks away from you, then you are actually a 10th class preacher. Prabhupada said, we knew how Prabhupada sometimes was very heavy. So he said that nobody should walk away from you when you are trying to preach. And that devotee said that, but Prabhupada, I am trying to speak the truth. So there then Prabhupada was explaining that just speaking the truth is not enough, but expertly speaking the truth is very important. And that is where then Prabhupada tells about Narad Muni. That Narad Muni was always speaking the truth. He was always trying to deliver the absolute truth to the conditioned living entities, whomever he was coming in touch with. But he was expertly delivering that truth. Not that, you know, people used to run away. So not just glib speaking or just speaking nicely or speaking the truth very brashly, such that it did not get digested by the audience. In fact, there is a very nice anecdote I heard about this. There was once a family, in their family there was a death. Someone died in the family and the neighbor was there. He wanted to actually express condolences to this family. So he sends his sons. He tells his sons that you all go and express condolences. Say nicely that we are sorry to hear about the loss. He explains to them how they should tell. So the younger son goes. The elder son doesn't go. The younger son goes. And he makes a big mess of the whole thing. He is not able to express condolences properly. And that family who's grieving the loss, and this fellow is coming and not even, you know, trying to agitate them more. So they get very upset with this son. And the father comes to know this. So the father says, oh, okay, I have to now go and make amends. So he goes to that family and he says, I'm so sorry that my younger son came and he did not communicate properly. He did not, you know, explain to you properly how he was trying to express our family's condolences for the loss in your family. But he said, next time it happens, you tell me, I will send my elder son. So this is what Prabhupada says, speaking the truth but not speaking it palatably. So he did not realize what he should speak. But we see that Narad Muni is expert. He is expert in delivering the truth. He is expert in also maintaining the original purpose, what he had come to deliver. In fact, there was once a village where one person was delivering Ramayana Katha. So there was a 7-day Katha that villagers had kept, and the speaker was every day coming and speaking pastimes of Lord Ram, Sita, Ravan, everything he was explaining. And now it was the 6th day, and he declared to the audience that tomorrow is the last day of the Katha. We are going to end the Katha soon now, and we have discussed all these pastimes, all that. He was trying to give a summary. So before he could start speaking, one of the persons who had been attending the Katha for 6 days, he comes and asks the speaker. He says that before you start speaking, please let me ask you one question. You are telling that the Katha is going to end soon. Tomorrow is the last day and now we are going to wind up the Katha. And you have been speaking so much. You said that there is Ram and there is one Ravana. And you are saying that there are demons and devotees and there is the Lord. So I'm a little confused right now. Can you please explain to me that out of this Ram and Ravana, who is the demon and who is the Lord? At the end of the 6th day, he's asking. And that speaker was so frustrated when he heard this question. So he says that neither Ram is a demon nor Ravana is a demon. I am a demon that I am sitting and explaining, trying to explain all this science to you. So, you know, the original purpose was lost. The audience had not even understood who is the Lord and who is the demon out of this whole Katha. But Narad Muni is different. So we see Narad Muni is so expert, he is so realized. Like we see the conditions which Prabhupada says for a person to be realized. So Narad Muni was not only maintaining, having full confidence in the previous acharyas, in his spiritual master Brahma, he was also speaking very nicely and delivering the truth as it is, very expertly. And we see that in this pastime of Dhruva Maharaj, for example. Now when Narad Muni was preaching to Dhruva Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj, we know, left. He was a Kshatriya, so he had that Kshatriya blood in him. So he actually left his home because he was insulted. And he goes to the forest and Narad Muni meets him there. So Narad Muni first tries to underplay. You know, he's trying to sort of titillate his Kshatriya emotions. So he tries to underplay the whole thing. And he tells him that why you are getting so upset? You're a small child, 5-year-old. These things happen. There are sometimes brothers fight to just sit on the lap. Go back home, go and play with your friends. Your mind will change. Don't worry about all these things. Everything will be alright. So he completely underplays Dhruva Maharaj's problem, just to see what Dhruva Maharaj's reaction is. But Dhruva Maharaj is a Kshatriya. And Kshatriyas have different characteristics. Prabhupada mentions Shaurya, Teja, Dhriti, Daksham. So Shaurya means they are full of valor. Teja means brilliance. They have that brilliance, that effulgence in them. Dhriti means they have sustainability. And Daksham means they are very expert in fighting. So these are the characteristics which were there in Dhruva Maharaj since childhood. He was born in a Kshatriya family. So he tells Narad Muni that please don't explain all this to me. Don't try to, you know, underplay my emotions and ask me to go back. And if you're going to tell me that, then you please go your way, I'll go my way. But I'm not going to go back to that kingdom because my mother, stepmother has insulted me. So then Narad Muni realizes, and actually in the next verse, Narad Muni glorifies the Kshatriya qualities of Dhruv Maharaj. So very expertly he realizes what is needed for Dhruv Maharaj now. He's a Kshatriya and what sort of preaching will work with him. So he knew that Tejas, that brilliance which Dhruv Maharaj had because of him being born in a Kshatriya family. And therefore he tells him to perform the highest type of austerities because he knew Dhruv Maharaj will be able to sustain it. Even though he's a child, a mere 5-year-old child, but he knew the potency and he knew the determination. How Kshatriyas are very determined. So he knew the determination of Dhruv Maharaj. And therefore he expertly gives him this instruction that you go and do austerities in the forest and then you will realize the Supreme Lord from within. And that is what Dhruv Maharaj follows. And we know then what happens, how Dhruv Maharaj has darshan of the Lord. So this is how he preaches to Dhruv Maharaj. But now if we see Narad Muni also preaching to Mrigari the hunter. So he has not only preached to elevated people like Dhruv Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj, who are all really elevated Vaishnavas, but he has also preached to hunters like Valmiki. Even Valmiki was preached to by Narad Muni, even Mrigari. So Mrigari, when he meets in the forest, Narad Muni knew that this is, he's an aboriginal. He's like a person who jungle, we say. He's living in the jungles. So no shastras, shlokas, nothing is, no mantras, austerities, nothing is going to work with Mrigari. He realized that. And that is why Prabhupada says, no, time, place, circumstance. You preach according to time, place, circumstance. So he realizes, looking at Mrigari, that these things are, and no shastric knowledge is going to work with him. No giving him some mantras or something to chant on is going to work. No asking him to do austerities like he did for Dhruv Maharaj is going to work. No telling Bhagavatam like he told Prahlad Maharaj. These things are not going to work because Mrigari is an aboriginal. He is not going to understand this language. So there again Narad Muni uses his expertise. He says that you are telling that you like to injure animals. And Narad Muni saw, he was aghast when he saw what Mrigari was doing. He saw one rabbit with only 2 legs trying to just, you know, limp around. Then he sees one deer through his ear, one arrow was pierced and the deer was writhing in pain. And he sees some animals, one hand is cut, or some animal, one eye has come out. So he saw how Mrigari was doing, you know, half killing animals in the jungle and taking great pleasure. So he asked Mrigari that what is this you are doing? So Mrigari actually is very proud and he says that, oh, I have learned this art of killing from my father. And my father learnt it from my forefather. You know, as if a nice parampara is following. He's saying this is in our family lineage. We learned how to kill animals like this. So then Narad Muni knew that I'll have to really, you know, give him, like jolt him back to reality. That is what is going to work with Mrigari. So he tells him that let me show you something. He tells Mrigari. And he shows Mrigari a glimpse of what is going to follow from Mrigari in the next life. And Mrigari sees that all these animals and all these beasts and all these birds whose, you know, one wing he used to cut and the bird used to flap around. So all these are actually coming back from Mrigari with their claws and fangs and beaks and teeth and all that. And he can see all of them coming. And Mrigari sees that he is helplessly writhing and all these animals are trying to get him. So this is the glimpse Narad Muni gives to Mrigari, direct perception. You know, that is the preaching method he uses for Mrigari. He gives him a direct perception. And Mrigari is so scared, he's jolted. And he says that, what should I do? I don't want to go down this path and suffer like this, having all these animals come back to me. So then Narad Muni says that you have to change your ways. You have to stop killing these animals. And of course, it was not only this realized, this direct jolting experience which Narad Muni gave, but it is explained that also it was Lava Matra Sadhu Sangha. Narad Muni, a moment's association of a pure devotee can transform the heart. So it was the moment's association of Narad Muni which transformed Mrigari's heart and it had already become very receptive. So then Narad Muni tells him that change your ways, please stop killing animals. First of all, go and throw your bow and arrow. And Mrigari says, but this bow and arrow is actually the means of my livelihood. This is what is sustaining my family. It is bringing food to the family. How can I throw this away? Then how will I maintain myself? And that time Narad Muni assures him. He says that you throw the bow and arrow away and you stop killing animals, and I assure you, you will be taken care of. So Mrigari falls down at the feet, accepts Narad Muni as a spiritual master, and actually follows the instructions. So you can imagine how hard it is for a hunter who was used for years and years, and in his family it was there, for generations they were used to killing, to immediately give up his bow and arrow and sit down and not, you know, stop the habit of killing. And then the villagers actually take care of Mrigari. It is explained how the villagers saw that there is, you know, he is such a nice saintly person who is meditating on the Lord and chanting and all that. So the villagers start bringing provisions for him. And later on, Narad Muni was passing by that way with Parvata Muni. And he tells Parvata Muni that there is one person whom I had preached to some months ago. Let us just go and see him and come. And that time when he comes to meet Mrigari, Mrigari is so excited. So Mrigari is running towards his spiritual master to pay obeisances to him. But he suddenly stops. And then Parvata Muni asks him that, why have you suddenly stopped? Why are you not paying obeisances to your spiritual master? And then Mrigari says that, oh, I was about to pay obeisances, but I saw this line of ants was crossing. And if I paid obeisances, those ants would have got killed. And therefore I am trying to, you know, refrain myself, allowing the ants to pass and then pay obeisances to my spiritual master. And then Parvata Muni realized that how Narad Muni is such an expert preacher, and how a moment's association with Narad Muni actually gave, you know, this transformation of heart to Mrigari. So this is how Narad Muni was, so expert in preaching. So again coming back to Daksha. Now Daksha's sons, Daksha had sent them to do meditation. He had produced 10,000 sons who are known as the Hariashwas, and he sends them for tapasya to the forest, and they go to a place called Narayansar, and he tells them, go and do tapasya, meditate on the Supreme Lord, have the realization and then come back. So Daksha knows how it is important to be purified before you actually continue the progenation activity of the world. And there Narad Muni goes. And Narad Muni preaches through allegories, because he knew the Hariashas were highly realized. So very beautiful allegories he preaches. Through allegories he preaches to the Hariashas, and he explains to them how it is futile and how they should leave this world and go. And then Daksha is lamenting again, like when the sons, you know, realize and they leave the world, they renounce the world and go away. And then Daksha produces another 1,000 sons and they also go. But look at Narad Muni's risk-taking ability. He is absolutely not afraid. He knew he has sent 10,000 sons away for self-realization to become brahmacharis. And he knew how Daksha is. And this is happening in the 5th canto. So in the 4th canto we see, you know, there is the pastime of Daksha Yajna. And we see how Daksha curses Lord Shiva. Shiva was not even doing anything. Shiva just didn't get up. He is the son-in-law of Daksha, and he just didn't get up to pay obeisances to Daksha because he was in meditation. And anyway, Shiva is actually on a higher platform. He need not pay obeisances. But Daksha was materially puffed up, so he does not realize this, and he curses Lord Shiva. And then there is a big fight which happens in that Daksha Yajna. But we know Daksha's anger management problem. So he has problems managing his anger. He has this tendency to curse. But Narad Muni is absolutely unafraid. He is still taking the risk. He has sent the 10,000 sons away, and he knows Daksha was upset and he was lamenting. But he still takes the risks, and he again goes to deliver the next 1,000 sons who have come to the river to meditate. And he sends them also away. And that time Daksha is really upset. And then Daksha curses Narad Muni. And Daksha says that just as you have sent my sons away from home, you did not allow them to come back home, I curse you that you will also never have a home. You will also keep traveling. You will not be able to stay in one place for more than, you know, some time. And Narad Muni takes that curse actually as a blessing. And Narad Muni says that, okay, it's actually giving me an opportunity to travel all over the universe and preach the glories of the Supreme Lord. And in that purport, Prabhupada writes. Prabhupada says that just as Narad Muni has been cursed by Daksha, so this, Prabhupada says, this animosity between the parents of devotees and the Krishna consciousness movement has been going on since time immemorial. Prabhupada explains over there. And just as Daksha has cursed Narad Muni, even we have the curse of the parents of our brahmacharis who have joined the movement. and the sannyasis who join the movement, and therefore we are not able to stay in any one temple for a long time. And Prabhupada also says that I'm passing the curse to all of you also. So you all also keep preaching, keep traveling and preaching, Prabhupada says. So we see Narad Muni was not only expert, but he was also ready to take risks. His heart is so much full of compassion. Only when the heart is full of compassion will a person be able to take risks for the Supreme Lord. Only when the heart is full of love will a person be able to, you know, go that extra stride to bring conditioned souls back on the path of Godhead. So Prabhupada explains, in fact, over there that this animosity has been going on, and Narad Muni delivered 10,000 sons, 11,000 in fact, after the next set also he delivered. So 11,000 sons of Daksha he made Brahmacharis. And we see even if one or two sons of parents become Brahmacharis, how they used to come and complain to Prabhupada. Even now we know some of the Brahmacharis are here, I'm sure their parents and even the Brahmacharinis, your parents must be upset many times that you all are leaving home and going away. What is this movement you all are joining? So that used to happen even during Prabhupada's time. In fact, Giriraj Maharaj used to say, like when he used to tell about his own life story. So Giriraj Maharaj was actually the son of a multi-millionaire father. His father was a multi-millionaire in the US. And Giriraj Maharaj left all of that and he joined Srila Prabhupada's movement. And his father, his parents were so upset that Giriraj Maharaj has gone away like this to join this movement. So they actually sent a deprogrammer to Giriraj Maharaj. And Giriraj Maharaj was actually, Prabhupada had sent him to Juhu to establish the Juhu temple at that time. And we know, we have read from the Leelamrita how the conditions were when the Juhu temple was being established. It was actually just a swamp, a marshy land, and it was completely rat infested, mosquitoes were there, neighbors were troubling, so there was absolutely no peace in that land, and very, very harsh conditions people were living, the devotees were living in, trying to build the Juhu temple. So this deprogrammer is sent, and he was paid, you know, thousands of dollars. He was a psychiatrist deprogrammer. So he comes to try and deprogram Giriraj Maharaj. So he comes and he sees and he realizes that forcing is not going to work. So I'll have to use some, you know, expert technique. He was trying to be Narad Muni. Use expert technique to bring Giriraj Maharaj back to his parents. So he first uses the first weapon. He says that let me make him realize that how he has given up sense enjoyment and how life is for enjoyment. Let me make him realize that. So he actually takes Giriraj Maharaj in one room alone. And he tells him that what is this you're doing? You are such a young boy. Life is meant for enjoyment. Plus you have so much money at your disposal. Your parents have given so much money to you. Why don't you enjoy with that money? Go and enjoy your senses. Go and enjoy life. Go and because it is so short, why do you want to waste time over here? See what you are doing, taking risks, living in this swampy land which is filled with rats and mosquitoes. So this is how he is trying to explain to Giriraj Maharaj what is the importance of sense enjoyment. And Giriraj Maharaj immediately starts quoting the Bhagavad Gita. So he quotes Krishna from the 5th chapter, 22nd verse. He says, Yehi samsparsha ja bhoga. He quotes that shloka. Dukha yona ya evate. He says, no, Krishna has said that actually this is all sources of misery. And you are telling me this money is source of happiness? So then the deprogrammer is completely confused. And he thinks, okay, now let me use my second weapon. First weapon did not work of, you know, making, telling him to, trying to entice him to do sense enjoyment. So then he says, okay, let me use my second weapon. So he says that, you know, with parents you will be able to live a peaceful life. How nice life you had, what a comfortable home you had. So peace is what you want, and there is so much anxiety here. So much stress, your guru or whoever is there is giving you. Go and open temples, sending you to far away places where nothing is, no facilities are there. Go to your parents' home, live nicely in peace over there. No pressure, no anxiety, just enjoy your father's wealth. Again, Giriraj Maharaj quotes shlokas from Bhagavad Gita. He says that no, Krishna has certified this material world as Dukhalayam Ashaswatam. So there can never be everlasting peace in this world. And you are talking about that I will have peace in my parents' house? No, Krishna has not certified like that. So the deprogrammer's second weapon gone. So then he thinks, okay, let me use third weapon. So you know how third weapon is always emotional blackmail. So he says that for your parents' sake you go. And I'm sure many, you know, Indian brahmacharis can resonate with this. Emotional blackmail by parents. For your parents, we have given you birth. How can you leave your parents and go like that? we raised you, we did underwent so much difficulties to educate you, and you are doing like this, leaving us and joining this movement. So that is the same thing this deprogrammer used, that your parents have given you birth, raised you with so much difficulty, and now you are not being grateful to them by leaving them and going away. So again Giriraj Maharaj uses shlokas. He says that Sarva Yoneshu Kaunteya Aham Bija Pradapita. He says, no, Krishna is the only real father. All other fathers and mothers are there temporarily in this material world, but my only eternal father, spiritual father, is Lord Krishna. And he has told that, you know, I should pursue bhakti, I should pursue devotional service unto him. And therefore I have joined this movement. So that deprogrammer psychiatrist was completely floored. And then he comes out holding his head because he could not succeed with Giriraj Maharaj. And he actually tells the parents of Giriraj Maharaj who had sent him. He tells them that your son has been permanently infected by Krishna. And therefore there is no hope for him. He will not come back. So you know he has gone through this moment and he is not going to come back to you. And then Giriraj Maharaj goes and tells this whole thing to Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada was so amused, he was laughing and laughing and laughing when he heard the entire episode with the deprogrammer. But Srila Prabhupada really liked the term which the deprogrammer used, that your son is permanently infected by Krishna. And then in the subsequent lectures, Srila Prabhupada was telling, many lectures Prabhupada quotes this, that you see our Giriraj, he has been permanently infected by Krishna. Prabhupada used to continuously quote that. So Prabhupada really liked that term. So we see, you know, Narad Muni has delivered 11,000 people, you know, boys to become brahmacharis. But here one boy has become and there is so much resistance by the parents. So even there is the pastime of Brahmananda Prabhu and Garga Muni. We know Brahmananda Prabhu recently passed away in Vrindavan. So Brahmananda Prabhu and Garga Muni, both are brothers. And they had joined and they were in Vrindavan at that time. And their mother actually came to complain to Srila Prabhupada. And the mother told Srila Prabhupada, that what is this you have done? You have taken away my two sons. And now I don't have anyone to look after me in my old age. How can you take away my two sons? So Srila Prabhupada again, you know, following in the footsteps of Narad Muni. Srila Prabhupada is an expert preacher. So he knew how to deal with this mother. So Prabhupada says that actually your two sons, they had become so wavered. They were roaming around in the streets as hippies. They didn't have proper clothes, no proper food. So actually I have taken them under my shelter and I am giving them so much nice nutritious food. Look at their health, how nice, you know, hatta katta they have become. Like, you know, nice and healthy they have become. So look at their health, how nice clothes I am giving them to wear. So I have taken them under my shelter and I am looking after them, I am maintaining them so nicely. So actually you should pay me $1,000 every month for looking after your sons. So the mother was completely confused. She was confused. I have come here to complain that he has taken away my sons and he is asking me to pay for their maintenance. So then the mother said, but how can you ask me for maintenance? I have donated my two sons to you. What more you want? So Prabhupada said, so okay. You are only saying you have donated your sons. Then why are you complaining? I have taken away your sons. So Prabhupada really expertly knew how to preach and the mother was totally confused at the end of the conversation. So she went out and then she met her two sons, Brahmananda Prabhu and Gargamuni Prabhu. And she tells them that your guru is very expert and now I know you are in safe hands. So she was very satisfied with what Prabhupada tells her. So we see that Narad Muni was not only heart full of compassion, expert in preaching and delivering the truth, but he was also taking risks. He was ready to take any risks. With Daksha, he is taking such a big risk. He knew Daksha has tendency to curse. He knew Daksha has this anger management problem. But he was still ready to, you know, accept any sort of risk if he can deliver those 11,000 boys. And not only taking risks, you know, with such cursing and all, even physical risks. It is mentioned in the Narasimha Purana that actually Narad Muni went to preach to Hiranyakashipu one day. So it's mentioned that he enters Hiranyakashipu's palace, chanting on his veena, he was singing the Radhika Raman song. So he's chanting Radhika Raman's glories and he's entering Hiranyakashipu's palace. And when Hiranyakashipu hears that, we know how much animosity Hiranyakashipu had for Lord Vishnu. So he tells Narad Muni that, can you please immediately stop? He becomes very angry and he says, can you stop that chanting immediately? Otherwise, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take out my sword. Now, Hiranyakashipu had a famous sword called Chandraha. And the characteristic or the expertise of this sword was that if once Hiranyakashipu would hurl that sword at someone, that sword would go attack the target which Hiranyakashipu wanted to attack and shred that target to pieces. And then because when it's shredding the body to pieces, there would be blood, so it would go to the nearest water body, wash itself, and then come back in Hiranyakashipu's sheath, the sheath which he used to keep in his waist for the sword. So he said, you know this Chandraha sword, I'm going to release it on you. He's telling Narad Muni, if you don't stop chanting right now. So Narad Muni says that, yeah, okay, no problem, release the sword on me, no problem. He is not at all afraid. So Hiranyakashipu actually releases the sword. We know he's a demon, he doesn't care that this is a great sage. He releases the sword, the Chandraha sword goes towards Narad Muni, but it just passes through the body of Narad Muni. It's not able to cut the body of Narad Muni into pieces. It passes through the body, and because there was no blood, there was nothing to be washed, it comes back into the sheath of Hiranyakashipu. And everyone present in the court of Hiranyakashipu, including Hiranyakashipu himself, was amazed that how is it this sword has never failed to attack the target and to kill the target. So how is it that today it has failed? So then Hiranyakashipu asked Narad Muni. He says that how is it that how come you have such a body that the sword was not able to do anything to your body? And then Narad Muni explains that I have this body, it has become transcendental because I am chanting the names of the Lord, of Lord Hari, of Radhika Raman. So do you want such a body? And Hiranyakashipu says, yes, yes, I also want such a body, but I don't want to chant to get this sort of body. So then Narad Muni explains to him about austerities, and therefore in future Hiranyakashipu goes and does austerities to achieve somewhat similar body to Narad Muni. But you know, obviously by austerities also you cannot, Prabhupada mentions in this purport also that by austerities you cannot get the Supreme Lord, nor can your body become transcendental like Narad Muni's body. So Narad Muni is ready to take these risks not only on physical level but even on the subtle level. So we know Narad Muni is a brahmachari. He's a self-realized soul, he's a renunciate. But we know in the 10th canto, he's actually going to where Nalakuvera and Manigriva are there. Now he knows that part, it's, you know, they were actually in the Alaknanda, bathing with naked women. So even in our movement, in Krishna consciousness movement, we know brahmacharis or sannyasis usually avoid red light districts or districts where there is too much of agitation that can happen to senses. Usually renunciates would avoid such places. But Narad Muni, despite knowing what he is going to see, he is still ready to go there, taking a risk. For his renunciation, he is ready to take a risk so that he can deliver the two sons of Kuvera. He knew what sight was going to await him there, and that was his main purpose of going there, because he wanted to deliver them. But still he is taking that risk, even on a subtle platform. Even though he is a renunciate, there is a risk to his renunciation. And we know there are people who have taken risk, like Saubhari Muni we know. We discussed it in the 9th canto, how he falls down when he sees two fish copulating. So, you know, people who try to take these risks but are not on that pure devotional platform have actually fallen down. But Narad Muni is a, you know, strict renunciate, and he's a eternal associate, pure devotee of the Lord. So nothing affects him. He's transcendental to all these things. But still he goes to Nalakuvera and Manigriva. And the risk, you know, Nalakuvera, and he did not have any risk of being killed by any sword. Nalakuvera and Manigriva did not have any sword. In fact, they did not have any clothes on them. So where they will have any sword to kill Narad Muni? But still he goes there, and then he expertly preaches to them, and he somehow makes them, you know, through his curse. Now preaching cannot be just direct. Through his curse he delivers them, and he gives them direct darshan of the Supreme Lord when they are standing as trees. So this is how Narad Muni is expert, and this is how Srila Prabhupada was also expert, following in the footsteps of Narad Muni. In fact, one Srila Prabhupada was in a cab in New York. He got in the cab with his servant. And the cab driver saw that, you know, this is an Indian Swami. So he starts talking to Srila Prabhupada. And he says that, oh, you are an Indian Swami. You have come from India. I know that Indian Swamis can perform lots of miracles. Because that is the idea which, you know, Westerners like Americans had. That Swamis means they perform some miracles. They can float in air, all these things. So he says, I know Indian Swamis can perform lot of miracles. So what miracle have you performed? Now Prabhupada knew what do cabbies understand, what, you know, language taxi drivers understand. Again, he was very expert. So Prabhupada says that, yes, I can also perform miracle. You know what miracle I can perform? He tells the taxi driver that if I enter into a room which is full of naked women, I will not get agitated by seeing that naked woman. Nothing will happen to me. And the taxi driver was shaken because that is something he could relate to. He knew that this is really a miracle, entering into a room full of naked women and not getting affected by it. So his hand was actually shaking when he heard that, and he actually acknowledged that, yes, this is a miracle. How can you stay unaffected when you enter into a room like this? So we see Srila Prabhupada was also expert following in the footsteps of Narad Muni. And that is what Srila Prabhupada wanted all his disciples also to become expert in preaching the message of Krishna consciousness. To use different ways and means, depending on time, place, circumstance, person, how to deliver the message so that it is suitable to the audience and so that it will somehow pierce the heart of the audience. And also following in the footsteps of Narad Muni, Srila Prabhupada wanted his disciples to take risks which Narad Muni was taking just to deliver the fallen conditioned souls. So it's time up. We'll stop here and we'll ask if there are any comments, questions, corrections.
One comment, first of all. Thank you for the excellent lecture. Giriraj Maharaj told us when Dandan endorsed that wish that his mother also came, mother and father, Bombay, and mother asked the Prabhupada directly that who is going to give you proteins? The Prabhupada said, this is Sandesh, you try it and you know there is a lot of proteins. He just covered everything. Transformed the heart of so many thousands.
Yes.
Amazing.
Yes, true. Srila Prabhupada always used to encourage his disciples. The question is, should we become a pure devotee like Narad Muni to become a powerful preacher like him? Prabhupada used to always encourage his disciples and all the devotees in the Krishna consciousness movement to preach as per your realization. Like we discussed, what is realization? So Prabhupada used to, in fact, Prabhupada once called Saraswati. I think she was the daughter of Malati Mataji. And she was hardly 3 years old, and Prabhupada once called her in the room, and Prabhupada asked Saraswati. And he asked her that, Saraswati, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? And she immediately said, Krishna. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada said that, see, she's preaching. She knows Krishna is the Supreme Personality. So I preach as much as you know. That is what Prabhupada knew. So we always, it is like a striving that we are doing. We are striving to become good through our sadhana, through our reading, through our hearing. But at the same time, we will never think we have become pure. So the day we think we have become pure and I can preach, that means actually we are not qualified to preach. So the feeling in the heart is always that we are not qualified to preach, but we are striving for that purification so that we preach according to our realization what we have at that point in our spiritual life. That is what Srila Prabhupada always wanted his devotees to do.
When Narad Muni came to pacify Dro Maharaj politely refused his suggestions of going back and just take it easy. And we glorify his Kshatriya qualities there.
Being sorry?
We glorify his Kshatriya qualities. Although we are not equal to Dro Maharaj, we can't compare ourselves with him, but because we also got such tendencies sometimes, like, you know, we have such qualities. Anyway, Dro Maharaj is a born Kshatriya, but to be a Kshatriya, you not to have a lineage of birth or anything. It's like karma and gunas. So if you have such tendencies, and we also sometimes, even while we are in emotional service, we tend to have such tendencies to express when some other devotees maybe, you know, behaving with you in a way that is not appropriate. But still, we will have a fear that, you know, we cannot do that because, you know, the person, though is doing it in a wrong way, but we feel like we'll be doing an aparadha towards that people. I mean, the devotees, so how do we reconcile, like, you know, the tendency? delicacies within you, and you cannot still maintain the relation with original tendencies, and you have a feeling of fear that you might commit a parada. So how do we reconcile? How do we behave?
Prabhu is saying that we also have sometimes Kshatriya. Many devotees have Kshatriya tendencies in them, like Dhruva Maharaj had. And we sometimes tend to use those Kshatriya's tendencies in speaking to other devotees if something is not appropriate. But the fear is that we might offend the devotee. So how do we curtail those tendencies, or is it appropriate? So we see from Dhruva Maharaj's pastime, first of all, we have to understand, yes, he was born in a Kshatriya family and he had all those qualities of valor, determination and all that. And Narad Muni expertly channelized those energies for him to realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So when Narad Muni was underplaying the emotions of Dhruva Maharaj and he was telling him to go back, I did not cover that aspect because that was not in the sphere of our class today, but Narad Muni was actually testing Dhruva Maharaj at that time. He was testing Dhruva Maharaj's determination, and he wanted Dhruva Maharaj's glories to spread all over the world, that even though merely a 5-year-old child, how determined he was to achieve his goals. So that is what Narad Muni was testing, and Dhruva Maharaj actually passed the test of Narad Muni because he was Kshatriya in spirit and he was very determined to achieve his goal. He passed the test of Narad Muni. So the Kshatriya tendencies were utilized to achieve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in fact, there it is mentioned, the whole lesson we learn from Dhruva Maharaj's pastime, which we learned in Keshav Prabhu's class also, in our Bhakti Vaibhav class, was that Dhruva Maharaj did what is called as Tivra Bhakti, Tivrena Bhakti Yogena. So he did intense devotional service. Because without doing intense devotional service, how can you realize the Supreme Lord in 6 months? Merely 6 months' time, Dhruva Maharaj had darshan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it is mentioned every month what all he did, like one thing he gave up. And in the last month, in fact, he stopped, he gave up breathing also. And that is when the whole universe started going into imbalance. The demigods go to the Lord, and then the Lord comes down to give darshan to Dhruva Maharaj. So the moral, or what we derive from Dhruva Maharaj's pastime, is that how to do Tivra Bhakti. So how do we utilize our tendencies? If we also have some such tendencies, how do we utilize those tendencies to do Tivra Bhakti? So that when Dhruva Maharaj utilizes Kshatriya tendencies to tell Narad Muni, I'm not going to go back, that was helping him to go progress on the path of devotional service and achieve his goal. So that is the filter we also should have always when we are having our dealings with other Vaishnavas. And we know some people have Kshatriya spirit, some people are very Brahminical by nature, so they are always sober and soft, but some people are Kshatriya spirited. So, but when we always have to have that filter, whether, you know, my spirit or Kshatriya spirit, or my speaking in a certain way, is it conducive for my devotional service? That is the filter we always apply to ourselves. Is it bringing me closer to Krishna, or is it bringing me closer to Krishna but taking someone else away from Krishna because that person is getting offended or that person is feeling hurt by my words? So that is the filter we always apply. Whatever I'm doing, is my motive to please Krishna? So if the motive is not to please Krishna, but it is to just please my own, I think I have Kshatriya tendencies, but I hope I'm not feeding my false ego through those tendencies. So is the motive clear? So always, you know, in devotional service, it is very important to do introspection. Prabhupada says introspection, chintan manan. We always do that introspection in our devotional life. And we try to find out that whatever I'm doing, is it pleasing to Krishna and Guru and the devotees? So that is how we utilize Kshatriya tendencies, to be strict with ourselves rather than, you know, telling those tendencies to others. Be strict with ourselves in our own sadhana. Like Dhruva Maharaj was utilizing his Kshatriya tendencies to do such Tivra Bhakti Yoga, such that he could realize the Lord in such a short time. So intense devotional service, determination, using that determination to do intense devotional service, that would be the proper utilization of our Kshatriya spirit. And even if we have to deal with someone, then always that filter, am I, you know, doing it to please Krishna? Is it helping me to come closer to Krishna? That is something which helps me if, you know, personally I'm in these situations.
Structure.
think it's time up. We'll end the class here. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki, Srila Prabhupada Ki.